What's up, everybody? It's Chad. I'm back again with another episode of Ask Chad Grassy Logic. Today, I'm here with my friend Waxy Brown, lighting up right now, aka Daniel Jones. So, thank you for showing up today, man. You know, it's great having you on, and it's great to see someone actually smoking on my show because we can't hear in the studio. So, you know, you're more than welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. Man, before we even get started, I just want to publicly congratulate you for making Influencer of the Year in New Mexico, man. Like, that's a big achievement. And before you even say it, I already know you're a really humble guy. So whatever you're going to say, I just want to tell you, the rest of us, we appreciate the trailblazing and everything that you've done in your life and sacrificed to be where you're at today and to help further this culture, man. I really appreciate you. And thanks for having me on.
Damn, man. You know, that was really heartfelt. And I appreciate that, brother. You know, I really do. And, you know, I thank you, you know, and, you know, I did want to talk about that briefly before we started. So, you know, I wanted to congratulate everybody that won an Essie, especially, you know, my friends, Tracy Martinez, David Hill, and the lovely Valerie Hubbard, who took home the main award, the Essie. Congratulations to all of you. And yeah, I took home Best Influencer for Cannabis in New Mexico. So it's a great achievement. I'm thankful. Thank you, everybody who voted for me. And it was a great celebration, too. So, but, you know, it's back to work and I appreciate it, man. You know, that means a lot, especially coming from you, brother.
I appreciate you doing what you do, man. Yeah. So I'm excited to be on the show, man.
Heck yeah. Me too. I'm excited to have you here, man. So, you know, we'll just jump into it. You know, why don't you tell the kind people, you know, who you are, what you're about, you know, because I met you a couple years ago and I'm like, man, he's like me of Missouri.
Well, I'll give you a quick little rundown and kind of let you decide whether I'm a good guy or bad guy in the end. So I joined the Navy back when I was 20 years old. I was in for 8 years, photographer for the first 5 years and then photojournalist for the last 3 years.
Okay.
Got to see 30 something countries. I had a wonderful time doing that. But when I got out of the service, I did what a lot of your uncles and stuff did. I dropped out and followed the Grateful Dead. So that was kind of my thing, was like I had done a lot. Okay. I did 8 years back to back sea duty because 9/11 happened, which didn't allow me to go to a cushy shore duty or anything like that. We went straight back out into the situations we were in at the time. So when I got out, I decided, you know, my brother Mike kind of got me into pot a little bit, you know, and so I just went full blown, just like a lot of those dudes, you know, that just go full blown into cannabis. That's what I did. I traveled from festival to festival, you know, selling cannabis on the traditional market to stay afloat, and just had a blast for about, you know, 7-8 years. And then just like a lot of us out there, I got busted. So I got busted with a couple pounds, and when I got arrested, they slapped me with a $300,000 bond, which I thought was extreme. And it was, because the guy in the jail next to me had been accused of killing his mother, and that guy had a $250,000 bond. Another guy had done some really nasty things to some kids. That guy had a $200,000 bond just over some weed. I had $100,000 more than murderers and pedophiles. I was like, this is broken. So yeah. In protest, because I didn't have kids or a wife or anything, so in protest, I refused the bond reduction several times and stayed in jail under protest for 256 days until they ended up kicking me out on Christmas. After that, and it's kind of a long story. After that, I got a little angry after 5 years of probation and decided that we needed to change some of those laws. So the best way that I knew to do that was, I knew all politics is local. So I ran for city council in Rolla, Missouri, and won 72% of the vote on a cannabis platform against an 18-year incumbent. So at that point, I thought, we're on to something here. So I helped run 10 other campaigns. I stacked the city council in Rolla. We decriminalized cannabis in the area, and then they kicked me right off for having a cannabis felony. So after that, I decided, let's just go be a loudmouth and let's go do things like this. So that's where we're at today, having a lot of fun and stomping in mud puddles, trying to make the ocean move out here, man.
Yeah, you know, I love that, because that's the first time I've heard this story. And you know, with the city council thing and everything. Dude, that's fucking amazing, because I preach all the time. I tell people 75% of the local elections go unattested. So if you just run against somebody, they're most likely tired of that person because he's probably been running for several years. You might win. And you ran on a cannabis platform. That says a lot. You know what I mean? And then yeah, the other candidates signs, and everything.
I had big signs out there next to the schools and stuff that said, Daniel Jones for city council. putting the ounce in council.
Oh, dude, you got to send me the picture of that. I'd love to, like, you know, just see that. That's great. I'll probably repost it even.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. But, you know, the moral of the story there, really, it comes down to guys like us, man, we never stop fighting, right? There's always going to be that next thing to fight for. Like, we're experiencing legalization in both of our states, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But are we? Are we really experiencing what legalization should be? Like, I'm in an interesting state because we have a closed market here. You have a wide open market there. I don't think that the version of legalization that we're going to see is what we've seen yet. I think once the federal government, it's just going to be a totally different ball game than what we're experiencing right now.
No, I agree. And that's something I talk about heavily on this show is that once I call them bubbles, we just went through our first bubble. We're kind of, you know, recovering from that. The next bubble will be when Texas, for us anyway, will be when Texas legalizes or when the federal government changes, because that will be the next bubble. Because, yeah, we have all kinds of different regulations to follow. We have, you know, different entities to deal with. And then they're going to tax us a lot, you know, like quite a bit. I was actually reading an article this morning about, you know, one of the bills that they introduced. And I didn't talk about it on the show today because it's a bill that I kind of hope dies. And for the simple fact that they're trying to tax small businesses 10% and then go all the way to, I believe, 18%. Or, no, it's 5% all the way to 10%.
No, it goes like this. And it's not just small businesses. It's going to be any business that deals in cannabis. The federal government, the bill that you're talking about, unfortunately, Chad, and fortunately, depending on how you accept the information, it is going to pass. I truly believe that is the bill that we're going to look at for federal legalization. And it states that in the first year, all cannabis companies, retailers will have to spend 5% on taxes. And within a 5-year period, that goes up to 12.5%. Now, don't get it twisted. That's going to be totally different taxations than what the Farm Bill is going to present, because the new workup of the Farm Bill is going to expand the Farm Bill to 1% on the THC side, as well as I believe it's going to introduce taxation into the hemp side, more regulation and taxation.
Yeah, because right now we're just paying just a regular gross receipts tax on it, essentially a sales tax. Yeah, because I just read it this morning. I didn't get to dive too deep into it. But yeah, from 5 to 12. And the reason why I mentioned that is because here in New Mexico, we're already at 20%, you know, and it's due to go up another percent. And then it's going to go all the way up to, I believe, with a total of, I think, of 28%, almost 30%. So when you add that federal tax on top of it, it just increases it almost to 40%, you know, at the end of the day, when everything's said and done, when everything's done increasing. So that's my fear in that bill. You know what I mean? But I knew the federal government was going to pull something like that because we're also paying the 280E tax right now, which I think this is kind of like their way to kind of recover that, because I think they like how much tax money they're getting from us from the 280E side. You know what I mean? Because they do get a lot of money, and then they really screw us in that because we can't really recover any of those funds back.
And that's the other part about this, right? So that's the thing about these cannabis companies. They're not going to complain as much about this federal legalization. The big ones won't, because now they're going to get the right stuff off. Safe banking will fall. They'll be able to make that money back. The interesting side for me is going to see where hemp lies, because I do believe that we are going to legalize federally this year. I think that they're going to signal it and they're going to lay everything out on the 20th of April, which I think honestly, I'm not too hip to them using 420. I think that's our thing. Y'all had us criminals only, you know, there's a whole deal there where I wish that sometimes they wouldn't use our culture against us. But I do think that this version of legalization is a very big first step that's going to trigger thousands of lawsuits across the United States when it comes to interstate commerce, people being able to move about the building. You know, you should be able to sell the cannabis that's grown in New Mexico. I would love to try that on a shelf in Missouri. And I would like to try different regions from all over instead of having to travel from state to state, 50 different states, 50 markets. It's not safe to move about the building. I slip up sometimes and end up in Kansas and I'm a criminal because of what I got in my car. Whereas in Missouri, I can have all my medicine.
You know, and it's funny, you know, I'm just realizing this now, you know, where you're at in Missouri is the same situation I am here in New Mexico, because I'm so close to Texas. You know, I'm you know, in that weird area where your neighbor, well, there's certain areas down south a little bit more for me where your neighbor can be in Texas and you're in New Mexico, you know? And so like, you're on that teeter-totter of just maybe breaking the law, but maybe not, because you're not too sure where the state line lies, because it's like a paper rip where it's at, you know, it's all uneven and, you know, goes everywhere. So yeah. Like it's interesting to hear that you guys have the similar issues, because like Texas, they're hardcore, you know, and I don't know what the Kansas side has for laws when, you know, how
it's extremely just as bad. Texas sucks. Just as bad.
Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah. Man. In fact, it'll be very interesting to see federal legalization happen, because there's so many treacherous positions in the United States of America that just shouldn't be there for us. Like we all know this plant should have never been criminalized to begin with. But here's the other part. Look out for politicians that want to kick the can down the road. And when I say that, when a politician tells you that they should make it up to the states, that is still criminalizing this plant. That is still ensuring that there are states out there that still are allowed to prosecute and persecute and make POWs out of just regular people. So it's, you know, there's a thing here where the drug war is still alive and in play. And just because we're in recreational states, we're in a big flux in the United States of America on what legalizations look like. So all voices need to be on deck. Everybody needs to be at their microphones. Everybody needs to be on the front line here. And we need to ensure that, for one, that we don't hand this plant over to Big Pharma, and two, that we don't make any missteps with some of these states that are out there legalizing. Like Oklahoma. Oklahoma had a huge misstep when they legalized. If we had guidelines in place and things that because a lot of businesses were, people lost their asses in Oklahoma, just lost their butts. And and you don't want that to happen to people. You don't want people to invest money and lose it. That's not what we're about as a country. This is America. We're all supposed to be able to go out and profit and be able to do what we want. And not having interstate commerce really screws that up. To where only a cannabis company can only operate in one state. That's ridiculous. Now the MSOs are doing their thing, but what about the mom and pops, right? So we've got to take these laws that are in our way that we're building up as we speak, and we've got to figure out how this actually works, because right now it's not. The 50 states, 50 different markets model is absolutely ridiculous. It's especially when we talk about something that's healthy for us, you know, something that can help guide these new generations away from alcohol and cigarettes and all these things, you know. We've got to be able to release the hemp, release the plant all the way.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I love all, you know, everything that you said, because, you know, I've said before that with the decision of, you know, even the DEAs, it could come this spring, you know, and we're sitting here at spring and, you know, if you say mention 420, and I'm like, they would do some corny shit like that and, you know, release it on, you know, 420 or legalize it essentially on 420, because that bill has a long way to go before, you know, it becomes any kind of law. You know, still has to go through his committees and has to go through the, you know, different chambers, then, you know, off to the president. So we could probably look forward to this year, the spring, I guess I would say, to the DEA decision versus, you know, the bill and everything. I say the bill, if anything, would be closer to election time, you know, because that makes more sense, because, you know, we're in an election year. It's weird, you know.
Yeah, it's not possible to legalize by 420, but they will make the announcement and they'll use that as an election tool. Where, you know, and also we get kind of tired of being election tools, guys. Like, just legalize us, move on to the next thing. Go get your money from the ketamine people for a minute if you need to. Leave us. We've been doing this for a long time, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I get tired of it too. It's like, I'm going to legalize weed. I'm like, what, in your third term? You know, like when, you know, when are we going to get this, you know, legal cannabis? So hopefully, yeah, we get that announcement, you know, here coming up soon, you know, but if it's on 420, you know, it's weird, but I'll be glad at the same time because we get some kind of announcement. Here's something I thought of, you know, where do you kind of feel we're going to fall? Is it going to be decrimmed from, you know, the DEA's decision, or do you think it's going to be at Schedule 3?
So that bill completely removes it. Yeah. Big Pharma wants it at the very worst position for them would be Schedule 3. So there's a part here where I'll be very honest. I don't want it on any schedule whatsoever, right? Because it's not a narcotic and everything else. But if it were to land in that arena, it does open a lot of things up that are better for us as human beings, which would be research, bigger research dollars into cannabis. We're not sending all of our research overseas anymore. Now we're in every institution in the United States, every big school, every research college. So there's that part. There's the part where Big Pharma is only going to synthesize. They're not going to use the plant. And when they do use the plant, when they do go to make full plant decisions, they're not going to start from the ground up. They never have. What they will do is they will work with the cultivators that are already out there doing their big thing. Now, will that be the big seven or the big three or whatever it is in cannabis at the time? We don't know that yet. But if it does land at a Schedule 3, there's positives to that. But there's also the negativity of criminalizing the plant, which if it's on there at all, there's the possibility of jail. And I'm for, you know, that's not a thing for me.
Yeah, you know, especially with us, you know, here in this, you know, borderland area, you know, we deal with a lot of weird federal stuff. And we'll talk more about, I'll update everybody on that. I just wanted to throw that out there because that still has a penalty for the person that's possessing it. Yeah, the businesses that are transporting now may be okay, but me as a user, I can still get screwed over or have my product taken at least at the border checks again, you know, still, because I can't go any direction without hitting one.
I don't know if there's a person in the industry countrywide that wasn't feeling for you guys over the last 24 hours with what we've seen come through in the news.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. You know, and like I said, we'll update that again. And I'm glad to hear that because, you know, we feel sometimes we're just yelling and no one even knows we're here. So, you know, it's good that, you know, people are actually listening and, you know, I'm seeing more momentum on that side of it and everything. But yeah, you know, those issues will continue, you know, if we don't actually do something about this. And Schedule 3, you know, and I'm with you on that one. You know, like I'm looking for decrim and full legalization, remove that bitch. But at the same time, you know, reality sets, you know, it's rare for one government entity to totally go against another government entity's, you know, suggestion. It has happened. Don't get me wrong, but it doesn't happen very often. We could be stuck at Schedule 3.
And that kind of kicks back to what I said earlier, Chad, and that's that the fight really never stops, does it? There's always going to be some nuance that's going to piss us off as a, you know, I say this, you know what the difference is between an advocate and an activist? Is simply doing something about it. And we are always going to be activists as well as advocates because we always want to be there doing something about it. And so that's when I say all politics is local. Your local folks don't have to go knock door to door and run for office every single time. Those phone numbers to those representatives and those senators are very accessible. And I can tell you, I've engaged it multiple times here in this state, and it really is effective and it really is doable. And showing up is even better, but those phone calls matter. So, you know, get four or five of y'all in a session with some herb and an ashtray and a couple lighters and a bunch of phones and have fun with it. Call these folks and let them know how we feel about these issues.
Yeah, 100%. And I try to preach that all the time too. I'm so glad that you mentioned that because, you know, some people probably think that this is just New Mexico that deals with it because I preach that all the time. I see you at your capital. You see me at my capital. We're always up there fighting. We're always up there, you know, trying to do what's best for the industry and the plant, you know, because they always try to do something to it that kind of screws it. But it's because there's just a lot of ignorance when it comes, you know, to our lawmakers, when it comes to cannabis and certain substances like that, let's be honest. I tell people all the time, it takes only two people from constituent to turn into constituents. And a lot of the times that's all it takes, you know, to change things. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. I got that from my current congressman. It's great to relieving to see, you know, that, you know, you're preaching the same thing too, you know, and you know it yourself, you know, you've ran politics, you know, like, you know, ran for office and everything, you know, and what? And so, you know, you're a testament to it. And I'm glad that people can see that too, that, you know, local elections, God, they mean so much, you know, and I can't kick that dead horse enough, you know, like it's so important to vote in your local elections because they affect you directly. All right. So, you know, let's talk about, you know, the markets for a little bit. You know, I know people, you know, they hear my conversations about, you know, legalization and we could talk about that more in the show because I know sure we will. But let's talk about the differences in the markets because you're in Missouri and, you know, I'm over here in New Mexico. You guys legalized, was it shortly after us or around the same time? Because we legalized were pretty, 2021 technically.
Yeah, we were pretty close to each other. There's some strikingly big differences between our markets, though. So I like to come down. Obviously, my show is produced by Justin Trowbridge of Route 66 Labs out of New Mexico. Big shout out to Justin Trowbridge for putting me on.
Good guy.
So I've been down in your area and had, like, we met at Lucky Leaf Expo down in New Mexico. I could tell you that there's vast differences between our market. So one side of that is there's vast differences between our cultures, right? You guys, that New Mexico culture is one of the most unique scenes I've seen, and I've been to a lot of these legal states. It's definitely like its own cannabis culture in itself. The vibes inside the stores, the patients, everything. Now, on the business side of things, that's where things get really weird. You guys have a completely open market, meaning that anybody can come down there and set up shop in New Mexico and get a license.
Yeah, and it's fairly cheap.
Yeah, you can't do that here. Here, we had one lottery. When we went medical, we had one lottery system, okay? Now, they went, and all those went out to these bigger entities that are out here in Missouri, and some pretty good ones, too. And then when we went to recreational, okay, those people that already had the licenses were given the recreational licenses, okay? So it's been a very closed market. I know you guys have, what, several thousand dispensaries, if I'm not mistaken, over 2,000?
No, we haven't hit the 2,000 mark. It actually has gone down slightly in the last few months. But I think overall, cannabis business-wise, it's over 2,000. I think that's the number.
But
retail-wise, I think it's like 16 or something.
Yeah, we're at 192 dispensaries and something like 80 cultivations. That's our cap.
Oh, wow. And how many people are in Missouri?
We're a huge market. I wish I had, I want to say it's 6 million, six million, but we're also a state that can service all the other states. So we're servicing the states that are under a prohibition. And then we're also serving we're the home of St. Louis, Kansas City, Como, Columbia, Missouri, Branson, Lake of the Ozarks. We've got a lot of tourist destinations here. So a lot of our money comes in from other states that are coming here to enjoy our scene. And because it's a pretty heady state when it comes to cannabis. We legalize pretty tough out there. But we have a very closed market. So a lot less brands than you see at a lot of other places. And then we've got micro licenses coming up, which we've already gone through round one of the cannabis Missouri micro licenses, which they have like a 250 flowering plant count, which is a smaller grow, right? Yeah. Compared to our big guys that have 60,000 square feet. So it's a bit of a different ball game. So we have our micro license ecosphere that is going to launch over the next year or two. They're all getting commenced, and round two is happening, and then round three. So it's been really intense here. But it's not like it is there. It's, you guys have more kind of a Wild West feel out there, a lot more mom and pop shops and things like that. Whereas here, we're kind of home of like the big mix between Big Canna and the mom and pops that were able to set up shop in Missouri in the beginning. So it's a wildly different atmosphere, and the cultures are totally different. But that's the cool part about this, right? That's why I want to see New Mexico flower on our shelves, Missouri flower, from like Vivid. I love the Vivid flower. We have a team called Vivid in Missouri. They make wonderful flower. I want to see them on the shelves in New Mexico. And I want things to be able to move about the building more so that we don't have, and with less problems, so that we don't have like these big busts that are happening down in New Mexico.
Yeah, you know, and that's the terrible part is we have to deal with that. And, you know, and one thing that I've noticed as a trend, you know, from the industry is craft cannabis is kind of becoming king, especially here in New Mexico. Craft cannabis is almost king here. And, you know, we're seeing that first happen in Canada. And that's where I first noticed it. And then I kind of saw that, that's kind of what's happening here. It seems that the consumer market in the States, once they go legal at first, they're going to get whatever they can. And once everything starts to get mature, more people open up, you start to get that craft cannabis. And that's great that you guys have the craft license as well. And you said you have 250 flowering plants, right?
That's just for the micro license folks.
Yeah. Yeah, for us, it's 200. You can pay for more, you know, blah, blah, blah. You just have to get a bigger license, et cetera, et cetera. And then another thing that they don't do here is they don't tax your plants if you have a micro license. So those 200 plants are not taxed. And if you have the bigger license, they tax you at $5 a plant. Yeah. So they at least did that for us. You know, that does help, you know. We just wish they had a little bit more plants.
When the federal government puts their tax down, bro, they're not going to care. It's that's a shitty part about the feds. But I don't know, man. Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be wild, Chad. I really think I think at the end of the day, though, craft cannabis, we still haven't seen it yet, but we will see the $10,000 pound. We will see a $10,000 pound on the shelves, available on the rec market eventually. That craft cannabis, that Gucci, we haven't seen that yet. We just haven't. Like, no matter what, you know, people talk about exotics and then we talk about whatever's above that and all that. Throw all that language away. And as we start to dial in more in this plant and research is done, they're going to come out with some things that we just wouldn't even think about yet. And that $10,000 pound is on its way. You'll see people, you'll see celebrities buying $1,200 ounces right off the cookie shelf. Everything's going to go up, not down like people think. There'll always be the value brands and the discounts. But I truly believe cannabis has not reached its price peak yet.
You know, and that's interesting because I've told people this, that there's always going to be something for somebody. You're going to have the lows, the mids, and the highs. you know, and sure, you can pay whatever you want to pay, just like anything. I can go get a fishing pole. I can pay $20 or I can pay a couple $100 to, you know, possibly $1,000 depending on, you know, reel and rod, you know, so it really depends on your market. So that's the thing that we're going to be stuck. And that's the beauty of having the micro businesses, you know, and allowing the big companies to exist too, because there's a market for that, but it's not going to be the only thing that's there. And yeah, you're right. We haven't reached cannabis's peak yet, but I think it's also transforming away from the high THC content and focusing more on a total active cannabinoid, you know, thing that we're starting to see. Because here in New Mexico, we're starting to see more flavors pop out, and more people want the terpenes, and more people looking for that, you know.
Yeah, I look for a blend, man. I look for a blend of culture and then flavor. I'm that guy that, you know, the strains I go to because I love those flavors, like OG Kush, Blue Cheese. Like, those are some of my favorites because those are such unique flavor profiles. And that's what I chase after, man. Like, we've got some really cool companies in Missouri that are using, like, we have Robust down the road in Cuba, Missouri, for me, that they use all living soil. And you can tell in their flower, and you could tell that they care. And, like, you know, at the end of the day, commercial cannabis, and my sponsors might get mad at me for saying it, but they love me because I say what I want to say. Commercial cannabis is always going to be mids compared to what these craft growers can do. In the same way that Anheuser-Busch Bud Light is not ever going to have a craft flavor because they're doing it by the you know, the massive building loads. You know, when you take time with anything, whether that's art or crafting a beer or a plant or taking time to roll something really nice, like, those are pearls, man. That's that top shelf. It takes effort and it takes skill and it takes resources, time, energy to be able to compete. And, like, at the end of the day, that's why I think these craft cannabis folks and the folks that are doing the smaller stuff, they're always going to do just a little bit better. And if anybody gets mad at me for saying it, then step up your game, man. Put out some smaller buildings too. Let's ride.
100%, man. You know, and I preached the exact same thing. I'm sitting here nodding my head. I'm like, dude, were you just, like, in my head the moment I was thinking of that too? You know, back in the day, like, this is crazy. Yeah. No, I'm with you 100% on that. You know, like, you're going to have these huge corporate, you know, businesses or whatever, you know, the Budweiser of cannabis. But it's always going to be what, you know, people call piss beer, you know, or mids in our world. And that's just the truth of it. And, you know, a lot of those guys don't care. You know, they're making money. They're getting a return.
And don't get it twisted. It's not the smaller cats that had the millions of dollars to hire the lobbyists and get these bills written and these initiatives done and all that. You have to give a shout out to the folks that, and listen, have your beef with them too if you want. But at the end of the day, you got to give people their flowers. And I didn't have the tens of millions of dollars it took to bring forth legalization in Missouri, but these companies did. So I support them. When I go into a dispensary, I buy some flower and some wax from the big cats. Even though I got a baller jar of it at home from a rosin I got from the buddy that's twice as good, I still support all aspects of it. Because at the end of the day, it's a true statistic that right now, less than 10% of the cannabis being sold in the United States of America is being sold over a dispensary counter. The traditional market will always reign king and queen until the end of time. But until then, I support the folks that have supported us. You know, I look for more culture. When I said I look for two things, I look for deliciousness, I look for flavor, and I look for culture. I might want to buy a Mike Tyson bite, you know, a little ear, or I might want to buy a weed inhaler just because I want that product, or, you know, the innovation and all that. I support all of that. So at the end of the day, I'm not drawing any hard lines between the traditional market and the corporate market. I'm glad they both exist.
You know, and I tell this all the time, you know, the traditional market will never go anywhere. There's traditional markets with alcohol and tobacco still. You know, we still have those markets. I mean, we all remember moonshine and still do, you know, so that's a traditional market that has never gone away. It's probably stayed the same, if not got, you know, more popular throughout the years. That's why we have to be careful with the certain laws that we write, because we could just have a point where that, you know, 90% becomes a 98-99%, you know, and then we see some issues along the lines. So, you know, that's where we have to be careful when certain laws that we pass. But yeah, I agree. You know, you're always going to have those traditional market people that, you know, are coming in. They still bring that fire and, yeah, you know, support them. But, you know, here in New Mexico, it is a little bit different because our cannabis got passed through DPA, Drug Policy Alliance. They're the ones who wrote the law. And then they had, like, just patients and stuff like that, because our medical market was so small that it was really hard for them to really be the only ones talking. And then there's only 2 million people in the state. So our legislators almost have no choice but to listen to us. So they actually set up times where we had Zooms and there was just nothing but constituents in there with our lawmakers. And we were able to tell them exactly what we wanted to see in the bill, what should happen. So that's one thing that I got to give New Mexico a shout out for, is our legislators actually listen to us sometimes, you know, they actually hear us. And so that's what's really cool about being here. And I'm finding out from other states is that's not the case everywhere, you know, like in California, not the case whatsoever.
No, in fact, it's a true story that the average time it takes for a bill to get from written to fruition is 7 years. And you guys beat that to the punch. So
yeah, 100%. I appreciate that, man. And we're one of the only states that enacted it through the legislative process too, because we don't have voter initiatives here unless it's a constitutional amendment here in New Mexico. So unfortunately, we can't just go out and, you know, pretty much get a bill like most of the other states did. You know, they did it through the initiatives. So here we had no choice but to rely on our legislators too. And we're the only state that doesn't pay them either, which is so weird, you know. And like, I tell it to everybody, and they're like,
"That is a trip." I didn't know that until a few days ago.
No shit. I tell people that, and they're like, "What?" And I'm like, "Yeah, they're allowed to have their businesses and everything." And they're like, "Isn't that like illegal?" I was like, "Not here. You know, like, how are they going to make their money if they're not paid?"
it really, man, I don't want to dive deep into it, but there's a lot of things that can lead to corruption. And I feel like sometimes that can be, if you don't have a rein on your politicians, I don't want to say it the wrong way, but you need to be able to not have corruption through finances. And I don't know, it goes both ways, I guess, but I don't know. I got a city councilman. I got paid, I think, $300 a month as city council person. So I didn't make a whole lot of money doing it.
Hey, you at least did it though. You know, not many people can say they did it. Luckily here in Las Cruces, you know, we have a really good relationship with our city council, and our city council is very responsive and, you know, very supportive of the cannabis industry too. So that's been great, because they voted to have 24-hour sales down here. Albuquerque doesn't have that. We have drive-thrus. Albuquerque doesn't have that. We also have consumption lounges. Not every place has that either. And then the drive-thrus were actually at risk just this past legislative session. That's when I had to go up there, you know, with a couple other people. We had to fight for it, but, you know, luckily lived to see another day.
I saw you. You know, the consumption lounge scene is a trip to me. I feel like that is probably one of the most necessary things that our culture needs. We have no safe places to go right now. Yeah. And like, I also believe that's why it's so important to have the hemp law. For a state like mine, cannabis can only be sold, just like yours, can only be sold in a dispensary.
Yeah.
Well, how at that point can I sit down at Applebee's and order a sandwich and a cannabis something instead of a White Claw?
Yeah.
Like, how at that point can I go into a pub, still be able to celebrate with my friends because that's where their baby shower is or whatever it is that I'm going to? How is it that I can't go in that pub and enjoy my choice instead of the choice of alcohol? So like right now, I think the Farm Bill is very, very important for the very reason of normalization throughout the platforms where cannabis can't be sold. So like, I just feel like at the end of the day, Budweiser is going to be in the game. Coors is already getting in the game. Pabst Blue Ribbon already has their THC drink out. The big guys are there, and thank goodness they're pouring their money into lobbying for this. But in states like mine that is closed, we have to still kind of fight to ensure that we have access to hemp, much less cannabis. And I never thought that after weed legalized, that I'd be like, well, wait, now I got to jump back there and fight for hemp? Well, yeah, because it's the only way that we can, in a lot of these places, can get that plant directly into the people's hands. You know, like, I can't have, it needs to go in hospital IV bags, okay? It needs to replace White Claw. It needs to be where Budweiser is. It needs to be on tap. It needs to be available in grocery stores in certain products. Like, we have to remember that we have an endocannabinoid system, and it's not just the dispensaries that have products for us. You know, there's a future to those drinks and those cannabis products that the dispensaries aren't selling.
Yeah. You know, I'm a big proponent of, you know, not putting us back in the basement is what I've been saying a lot lately. You know, stop putting us back in the basement. We love to socialize, you know, like, we want to be out. I want to be able to go to an Applebee's and have a cannabis infused drink, because I get it. You're not supposed to smoke indoors. Okay. Well, give me a cannabis infused drink. Give me a cannabis infused burger. You know, that would be fire. You know, like, I would enjoy that two different ways. You know, so that's one thing that we're actually pushing for here in New Mexico, is to normalize it. I've been on a huge initiative to allow us to have sales at events, sales at concerts, you know, they have like a cannabis, you know, how they do wine fest, you know, do something like that for cannabis, allow consumption and the sales there, because we shouldn't just have to go to a brick and mortar building to buy it, because I can't go to the movies. I can't go to a sporting event above high school. I can't go to a restaurant. I can't even go to a taco truck sometime without alcohol being pushed on me. And sometimes these places literally push you to drink, and like they'll literally have a system to try to get you to buy a drink. And, you know, that's not fair. Like, I shouldn't be forced to do that because I don't want to drink, you know, like I want to use my cannabis, and I should have that choice, you know, at the end of the day.
And the consumption lounges are another way for our culture to stand out. There'll be some shoddy ones, some not too great ones, you know, like just like there's dive bars. But then there'll be the high end ones, the people that actually invested in consumption itself, public consumption. Those are going to be fire. Those are going to be like, because you're kidding if you don't think Vegas is going to eat that up. Frisco is going to have them. They're going to be, you know, here in Missouri, we have several of them. Big shout out to the Treehouse Lounge.
Heck yeah.
The Cola Lounge. There's all kinds of good ones happening everywhere. Like, get them on every bureau, every corner, everywhere. Let's get them everywhere.
And you know what? I don't know if you knew this, but back in the day during medical, I was on the governor task force called the SM-105. And that task force was meant to update our medical cannabis laws before we went legal. This is around 2018-19. And I was actually on the consumption lounge part of it. So consumption lounges are my baby, dude. And I agree with you. When I was doing them, I kept telling everybody, anywhere and everywhere. Because I said, well, where do you want these? I said, anywhere and everywhere. We have a lot of military installations here. We have a lot of native reservations here. We have a lot of government housing. People, they should be outside of these areas so these people can store their cannabis there and use it there and then go home. You know, that's for here, that's what consumption lounges were meant to be. But, you know, rec comes along, and you know what? I love the fact that, yeah, we should be able to have a place like this. But I kind of feel that the medical aspect of what we originally intended it here in New Mexico should be there, where, you know, the people that live, you know, because there's spouses, you know, military spouses that use cannabis. I'm sure you know that, you know, we both know that. And they should be able to use off base, store it there, and then go home and not risk anything, not risk their husband's rank or anything like that because she brought it through the gate or something like that, you know, because we know how bad that can be.
Yeah, there's the other part where you're about the education factor too. And like those places are great places to hold events like that are, you know, to educate the public about not only that, but the future of these plant-based therapies and mushrooms, ketamine. There's a lot of education that we still need to get a hold of for the public. While we're in the middle of this great wave of normalization, we need to be able to have those places to go present that, because honestly, we kind of get tired of getting thrown out of public libraries when we present. Like, so we need places that are friendly to us to be able to have, you know, a 6-hour symposium, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I am hosting, I don't know if you knew about this. I've told you about that expo I'm hosting down in August, the Graxy Logic Expo.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have time to come down in August, you know, come on down and it'll be all education. I want to have as many big businesses there as possible, like national brands, like, you know, the lighting companies. I want to have, you know, nutrient companies. I want to have a joint machine company there, you know, everything, even the Mylar companies that provide packaging and stuff like that. You know, I want something for the industry here, and also to have the industry show up and, you know, do their booths and all that and promote themselves as well. So yeah, if you have the time, man, it'd be great to have you down, because I know we met, you know, in Albuquerque a couple years ago at the Lucky Leaf. You know, it'd be great to have you down again, because that was such a cool time to meet you then. I was like, oh man, another guy who does like the same shit I do. This is great, you know, and even more, you know. So like, you know, it's great to run into people like that, because, you know, you don't run into that in New Mexico a lot, you know.
You know, there's the other thing, brother, where we always got to support our fellow veterans. So thank you for your service too, my friend.
And thank you for yours, brother, for sure, 100%. Thank you for your service.
You deserve it.
You did many more years than me, man. And you know what? And if you guys don't know this, in the military, the photographers, a lot of times they see some shit. You know, like if you see like the photos of like a battlefield, that's a military photographer taking that, and they're normally not armed. So like, you know, that's a lot of balls, you know, like to go onto a battlefield with just a camera. You know what I mean? Like that's
crazy. You know, another kind of funny part about that. So I was of that school where I caught 7 felony counts when I was a senior in high school. The local police department took away my skateboard. I got mad, shot some windows out with the pellet gun. Caught 7 felony charges of property destruction. My attorney at the time, Russ Carnahan, said the judge said if you join the military, they'll drop everything and you only have to do basically probation while you're in the military. So I agreed to it. I joined the Navy as a photographer, which is pretty great. And then I find out that while I'm in, I can't even touch a weapon. I'm not allowed to touch a gun because of my gun charge. So the whole time I'm sitting there with a Nikon and that's it. But I tell everybody, I shot more people than everybody else in the Navy. I just did it with a camera.
Oh, that's fucking great, dude. Pokemon Snap in the Navy. Love it. Oh, dude, that's great. And you know what? It's an interesting job because, I was Intel, but I ran to a couple of those guys a few times. I'm like, man, you guys got a pretty cool job. You get to go all over the places, but the Army guys, they get put into some, really shitty situations. I mean, sure, the Navy even would probably put you in a couple of shady situations yourself,
So kind of a crazy thing is, man, is all of the military photographers and photojournalists all train at one school at Fort Meade, Maryland, Defense Information School. So we're all trained by the Army. So all of your photographers, all your journalists and all of the services, even the Coast Guard, all of them go under the same training and the same, which I'll be honest, bro, that kind of sucked because you know what, in the Navy, like we're kind of chill in the Navy, to be honest. I was a West Coast sailor, right? So I get out of boot camp and we're supposed to go to school. All the other sailors go to school and I go to school where the Army's teaching. And like, you guys don't let boot camp stop at boot camp. It just like, he kept it going through school. And I'm like, this is school. We're not supposed to still be getting yelled at and everything. Like, so I just did this thing where everywhere I walked, if I saw anybody of rank in the Army, I just turned a corner and got away from it as quick as possible. Cause like y'all go hard even during like your A school or whatever you call it.
Yeah, dude. And when I joined the Army, AIT is what we call it. Advanced Individual Training for those who don't know who are watching. And I'm at AIT. Yeah. At the time they just got rid of the drill sergeants. They just brought them back, I think. But at the time, like the month before I got there, they just got rid of them. They were now all just training NCOs, but they were still drill sergeants. They just didn't have the hat. So it was like, okay, what was the point of that? Because they were still smoking us the same amount of time, and still yelling at us and, waking us up at 3 a.m. to go smoke us in the pit.
Yeah, when I was in, they still had the hats. So you could see him coming from a mile away. It was like an eclipse. You didn't like it, dude.
It was kind of almost worse because they would sneak up on you because everybody had the beret on and they would just like be there and you're like, oh my God, this is the And actually one of them is on my Facebook. He's probably going to watch this episode and laugh because he did it a few times. Yeah. You're an asshole for it, but you're cool now. I really wanted to talk about, more of this hemp stuff, we were talking beforehand and everything, and I haven't really dug deep into the new hemp bill that's going to be coming out because, it does get revised, and things do change and, there are some plans. I just haven't really dug too deep in it. I've been so busy with New Mexico, man, please, inform us on, the new hemp bill that's going to be coming out.
Yeah. So your hemp right now is at your legal allotted amount is at 0.3%, right? So that's just your THCA. So when it comes down to it, all of this flower that's out there, your hemp, your cannabis, it all becomes THCA when you ignite it and you set it on fire. So that's basic science. But the reality is that Farm Bill is going to that. There's a national standard already for hemp products, and it's at 1%. So the Farm Bill is signaling that they're going to increase to 1% on the hemp laws, which, there just isn't anything out there that falls much above. Let's be very honest. If I grow a pound of cannabis, okay, and I test it, okay, and it's on my THCA, not the THC, but the THCA, if it falls under 0.3%, that's going to the head shop. Okay, it's going in a big jar where they're going to sell it as THCA flower. If I get tested just a little bit over that, even if it's like 0.01% over that, that's going to the dispensary. Now, that's why we have problems with products growing hot and problems, products not growing hot, which is when it grows, into Delta 9 that they have to send to a dispensary or get rid of if it's hemp. All that's going to settle with these new laws, including the new Farm Bill. That's going to settle that line higher to where you're not going to have that distinction anymore. And that's what Big Canada is really worried about is this Farm Bill is not only, I call it soft legalization. That's what I call it. Because once people really dug into it, a lot of us in the beginning went, hold on, what did you guys say? Yeah. And a lot of people think it's a loophole. But it's all that conversation of it being a loophole only stems from a couple politicians that said it from a couple little states. The fact is the scientists, the farmers, the people behind these products, big petroleum, Big Beverage, all these people were at that table when these rules and things were being decided. So to believe that they should dial anything backwards with cannabis, I believe that in my heart of hearts, if someone says, and they might not realize it, okay, they need to meditate on it a little bit. If someone says that these Farm Bill compliant products should be banned, that is prohibistic behavior not seen since 1938. We cannot continue to, in any way, shape, or form, ban these products, get rid of these cannabinoids. What we do need is solid regulation, 21 and up only, except in medical situations, right? We need good packaging laws. We need to make sure that because the age gating is the most important part, right? We need to make sure that we're not putting out medicated Oreos and things that, you know, the Sour Patch Kids and the things that scream to the kids. We need to be responsible about our consumption. So there's a thing here where our laws are all shifting, and damn the federal government for making us do it one state at a time. So that now we have to dial back so much more while we unravel, we have to ravel, and it's ridiculous. And the end game, free the plant, get it above that 1%, get it to that 1%. Let's tax it if you need to, because we know you're going to, because that's what you've done historically since the beginning of America. Let's just get to a point to where we're not putting people in jail in any way, shape, or form, except for a retailer that's trying to sell to a 13-year-old kid.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and I say this all the time. We don't want prohibition with perks, you know, and a lot of what's going on is prohibition with perks, you know, and that's one thing that I keep trying to tell people is like, you don't want that because, you know, you just, it seems like you're cool. You have a little bacon hanging in front of you, but, you know, you can never get to it because there's a pole hanging from the back of your, you know, your head. So it's sad that we do have to go this route, you know, and updating the farm bill does seem like something that needs to happen. Here in New Mexico, our Department of Ag does give us a little more wiggle room than the federal guidelines. So that's actually really nice on our hemp side. I think they give us actually 5% is what I think I remember them telling me a while back, which is actually phenomenal. You know, like we actually give you more wiggle room because here they understand, like we understand you can't really control it that much, you know? So, I mean, 5% is fair, you know, like, so that's one thing. However, they do have to destroy. Huh?
And for me, it comes down to the farmers. Like I'm in the heartland here. I want to protect the hemp farmers in Missouri. And the problem that we have with hemp right now is it 98, because a lot of these states, because federally it's not legal and it's not regulated. It is legal. Hemp is legal, not regulated. So at the end of the day, a state like mine, my farmers cannot grow industrial hemp because there's no entity in Missouri to rate that for production or to any guidelines for them to go by. Or there, because if I'm Nike and I want to buy 7 tractor trailer loads worth of hemp to make the new Nike Hemp Air Plus 2 or whatever, I can't buy it from the farmers in Missouri because it doesn't come with the right paperwork. I got to buy the right paperwork because I got to now ship it to 58 different countries. So there's a thing here where we've got to be able to normalize for the farmers. And until they do that, they need to be able to make chocolate bars, gummies. They need to be able to do pre-rolls. They need to be able to do hash holes. They need to be able to do innovative products because they can't grow the fiber, because they can't do the hempcrete and make the bricks and build Ukraine with the new products that we have that we got here, or sell all this hemp to Kanye West because his dumbass made a new product. Like that, we're missing out on all these things, and God bless Canada because they sure did trailblaze with hemp. But 98% of our hemp that we make products within the United States of America, the hemp comes from Canada. That's bullshit. We have farmers across America who are having to get subsidies every day because they can't make the products that we needed to make. Missouri was one of the largest hemp producers in the United States of America. We were the very last state to prohibit cannabis, and it's because they made us. So at the end of the day, states like mine, we need to be able to do what we do best in these industries, and that's grow, grow, grow. And like, we want to farm, but you have to allow us to farm. We need the proper regulation. So that's where these laws are going. And I see it. It's coming together so well, but there's so much big interest involved, right? And we have to have them there. We have to have big textile on board. We have to have big beverage on board. Even Marlboro, we need Marlboro's money. I hate to say it. At the end of the day, we even need big pharma, because I've got to get this into every hospital, every nursing home. Chad, you and I don't want to sit in a nursing home without weed, do we?
Oh, hell no, especially the VA nursing home. You know, that
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We got to get it in the VA system. And then, you know, so, and blessings, it's all happening so fast. But at the same time, it's almost like a whole bunch of carts crashing into each other and trying to figure out how we're going to unmangle it. So it's, we're blessed to be alive right now because of all the change, but we're also blessed because guys like us, man, top influencer of the year, you got a voice, man. And like, you're using it the right way and hitting home runs with this plant. So we're going the right direction, brother, as a country.
Heck yeah, we are. I appreciate it. And, you know, and thank you for that updater and, you know, on the hemp stuff and, you know, making my audience realize, you know, how important both are, you know, and how much they kind of need each other. You know, if one's kind of fucked up, the other one's going to be, you know, fucked up once we get there too. You know, and we just need to make sure that we keep moving this plant forward, you know, because the less that we do that, and then the more we allow them to push us backwards, it's just going to suck ass. So I thank you for that. Is there anything else on the hemp bill that you want to, you know, give everybody an update on?
No, except that we just need to be patient, man. Like, I know a lot of folks out there have these small businesses. I mean, I know so many of them, so many, you do too, Chad, that own these small hemp businesses that are putting out a hemp candy bar or whatever it is. Like, we need to be able to still support those folks while they're settling all this and getting all this into play. So that's when you hit those head shops, look for those products. You know, I'm not about buying that hemp chocolate bar from China. Leave it. I don't want it, but I'll support the one from Nebraska or the one from Ohio or New Mexico. Cause like, I'm not going to have that chili mango or whatever y'all got going on down there, you know, but that's the thing. Support these small farmers at the same time, support the head shops and everything while we expand this normalization and legalization. But for me, it's all about there's going to be one day we are going to wake up and it's going to be very soon that these things, these products are in place. These laws are better. And then we'll find out what that next fight is. And that's psilocybin.
Yeah, hell, it is. It is psilocybin. But before we get to that conversation, let's talk about your book real fast. I don't want to leave that off the table. I really want to touch on your book because you told me, you know, you have a book coming out. So let's touch on that real fast. And then we'll jump over to psilocybin because like I told you, I want to talk about psilocybin and veterans. It's like another veteran here.
Yeah, you bet. So I'm blessed to be part of the Courage and Cannabis book, volume 2. Which is a big shout out to Dr. Bridget Cole Williams for getting the book together and getting all the authors. I believe there's 34 or 37 of us that are in the book that get to tell our stories. You can pick up the book, as I start telling you about it, you can pick it up at courageandcannabis.com is where we're at. And you can read all of our short stories there and everything as well. But you'll find I'm in there as well as Dr. Bridget Cole Williams, Candy Flores, Mike Tyson, Adam Wilkes, Ed Rosenthal, lots of really, really cool people out there doing their thing. Lots of celebrities and lots of really humble and wonderful folks. But the book itself is all of our stories and some of the things that we went through. And you get to hear things like from Mike Tyson that you've never heard before, or a lot of us have read Ed Rosenthal's Grower's Bible, but this tells a story from his perspective about his life. And there's a, you know, we are a family. The Courage of Cannabis team is not a network, so like we really support each other, and it's been a wonderful experience. But we're being reviewed right now by Cheech and Chong. They're doing the review for the front of the book. We're pretty excited about that. Big shout out to Adam Wilkes for putting his energy into the book. He owns Tyson 2.0. Is the CEO of Tyson 2.0, and of course to the big man himself, Mike Tyson's in the book. We're excited about that. So the book's already out. Yeah, they'll have the Cheech and Chong stuff will come later with the review, but the book can be found at courageandcannabis.com. So big shout out to the team.
Dude, that's awesome, man. Congratulations.
And we're bestseller in 13 categories and number one in 7 categories on Amazon.
Dude, dope. So you can get on Amazon too. Okay. That's good.
You can get it everywhere.
Okay, awesome, man. Well, congratulations on that, by the way. That's a huge achievement.
Yeah, we probably should have had Oprah like read the book, but we went with Cheech and Chong instead because we figured they'd understand.
It makes sense. You know, they actually just opened up the dispensary up in Albuquerque a couple weeks ago, so that's pretty cool to hear that they're doing that too.
Courage and Cannabis team was there. They were signing books.
Oh, no way. Are you going to be doing a book signing at anywhere?
You know, I'll set some of that up for this year as we go forward. But right now I'm in a little bit of a flux with putting the new show together and all that. So, but big shout out to those, to the folks up there in New Mexico for putting us on up there. John Fisher and the Dreams team up there with Cheech and Chong. They're great folks that have really supported the Courage and Cannabis squad.
Awesome, man. Yeah, it's good to hear that. You know, it's cool to see that because, you know, that's something that many people wanted to see most of their lives, you know, like a dispensary for Cheech and Chong, whatever it is. But, you know, it's great that they can do that and they have that opportunity. So congrats to everybody with that. And, you know, it was cool to see. So before we move on to the psilocybin, where can people find you online, you know, to follow you and everything and to check out your shows, especially the new one coming out?
Yeah, so the new show's Waxy Brown's Review. That's not like I'm reviewing products. It's R-E-V-U-E. So waxybrownsreview.com. You can catch up with us there. We've got the show's going to do a launch sometime in quarter two. We're working out the studio right now. Got a brand new studio we're really excited about. Big shout out to Mad Hatter's Emporium for giving us the space. And to our friends at Show Me Organics, Vivid, Blue Sage, and Buoyant Bob for putting us on in the studio. So we're really excited about the new program. It's going to be we're kind of dialing in on the time, but I'll hint it. It's, you know, it's probably going to be about an hour and a half of just a lot of fun culture and a lot of good. We're going to highlight a lot of what's going on here in Missouri, as well as a little bit of what's going on outside too.
Awesome, man. Well, that's cool to hear. And, you know, I can't wait to see it. I know I was on one of your episodes in your prior show. So, you know, I'll be looking forward to maybe be on something like that in the future, you know?
Bro, I'm about it. We're going to have a lot of fun, dude. Like, and then you guys can catch me, Waxy Brown, on any socials, Daniel Jones on Facebook. But you can Google Waxy. We're everywhere, man. My team is loud and proud, and we're a great squad, man. So a big shout out to my co-host, Tim Harms, and my producer, Justin Trowbridge from Route 66 Labs right there in New Mexico.
Awesome, man. Yeah, shout out to Justin. Good guy. Love him to death. You know, great dude, big heart. So,
yeah, you know, like, honestly, I tell people he does some work with lots of my friends out there in the industry and stuff. And if you want quality websites done, logo work, branding, marketing, the dude is amazing, man. I've never seen somebody that's able to take my ideas and bring them to fruition like Justin does, man. So big shout out to that dude.
Awesome, man. Awesome, man. I appreciate that. So without further ado, let's get on to this next conversation. Veterans and psilocybin or mushrooms. So this is something Oh man, I'm excited too, because here in New Mexico, we actually just passed like pretty much a study bill. It was a Senate memorial. So it's directing the DOH to please kindly, if you'd like to, if you can, work with University of New Mexico, because they are currently studying psilocybin right now. So the DOH will work with them, figure out, you know, get some study stuff going on. And this is pretty much leading to us getting a medical psilocybin program here in New Mexico, which is massive and huge, because that is like a very fast timeline. Which is, you know, still shocking, because it took us so long for cannabis, you know, like, but, you know, I don't care how long that it takes. I'm just glad that it's happening.
So I'm proud to announce that due to the work with our friends, Epen Thampy, Ron Hicks, Representative Ron Hicks, big shout out to Ron and Epen, and lots of our friends in the cannabis industry, we're going to be the very first state to set up and it's already been directed. We passed the law, and it's for veterans only right now, but we'll have the first psilocybin actual program in the United States of America. So we're really excited about that, because we are very, very, very enriched with veterans out here due to the low cost of living and so many of our military bases in Missouri. I live in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, right outside the Army base myself. So we were able to use the veteran conversation, which is one of the most important, because it is the loudest voice in the space. We were able to pass that here. So it's amazing to see so many states going at it at once, because like, look at marijuana moment. It's almost becoming like marijuana and psilocybin moment, the magazine, because it's almost like there's so many different happenings across the United States that are legalizing, setting up programs, directing people to do research, even city councils and like smaller governments. And so right now there's a big wave of that. And I want to give a big shout out to cannabis, man, because cannabis really opened the door, and CBD opened the door for us. And these plants, I said it in the beginning, and I think you might've said the same thing on my show. Once one goes in, the plants go marching in, hooray, hurrah. And like, we're having a blast getting these things passed, because we know that it's saving lives.
Yeah, 100%. Because we rely so much on just this synthetic medication stuff that we forgot that there is medicinal benefits to natural plants too, as well. You know, like not every plant, don't get me wrong, but you know, there's certain plants, psilocybin plants, cannabis plants, you know, all kinds of plants that have medicinal value, you know, and it's great that we're finally getting to that point because yeah, once cannabis fell, I knew mushrooms were going to be shortly. I just didn't know it was going to be this fast, you know, but I'm glad. Because you know, psilocybin doesn't have the same stigma as cannabis, you know, unfortunately. But fortunately at the same time, because you don't have to worry about the same stigmas. But unfortunately, cannabis has crazy amounts of stigmas that we're still fighting to this day. It's good for psilocybin because once we do go that avenue, more people will be receptive to learn. Here in New Mexico, when we passed the Senate Memorial, no one voted against it. Not one Republican, Independent, or Democrat. The most conservative senators were on that floor. And one of them was actually a sponsor of the bill. And he says, I'm a veteran. I go to the VA and I talk to my vets and they say this helps. You know, the VA is also looking at studying veterans too. So, you know, shout out to Missouri. Maybe you guys will be a part of that pilot program because, you know, the VA does want to study it. So, I mean, that's a great opportunity for all of us, you know, and I'm glad to hear that they're really including veterans and they're not making it seem like, well, maybe they will feel a certain way, blah, blah, blah. Well, screw it. You know, if we have it, we need it, we're going to use it. You know, it's there. It's access for us.
Yeah. And here's the part that people, you know, Chad, I'm a recovering alcoholic myself. Okay. I've just graduated from cognitive behavioral therapy for alcoholism. Last week was my last therapy session. And I can say this, mushrooms, and my therapist understood that. I used a VA therapist. I used my cognitive behavioral therapist from the VA. I let her know from the very beginning that I was going to use psilocybin during this last 6 months that I've been doing this. And she just straight out told me, your goals are my goals. And if your goal is to get rid of alcohol, that's our only goal right now. So yeah. She even documented like some of the information I gave her about the psilocybin I was taking and everything else. And so my point is this, everybody talks about the PTSD side of this, which is so important. It is so important because we know unraveling all this. You're from an intelligence background in the service, so you have a bird's eye view of what these cats went through. And so you understand that the PTSD part is massive, but so is the alcoholism part that we're ignoring through the VA system, because we know that, Chad, when you graduated boot camp, what's the first thing you went and did? You went and had some drinks. When you graduated, and it got to be to where every day getting off work became a graduation, became, you know, we did something patriotic. Let's go home and be a veteran or be what we are. And like,
oh, at the end deployment? Of the day,
dude, it's a nightmare. You just lose it to it. And there's just no reason not to, because that's the training that you get, because they know what you're going to go through. They know what you're going to take back home, but they only have one thing to give you, because they're not going to hire a platoon of therapists for you. They're going to build bars. They're going to make sure that, you know, in the Navy, if I'm out for 45 days, my contract says they have to stop the ship and give everybody two beers. That's in every sailor's contract. That's a true story. It's ingrained in everything that we do in the service, from graduations to we all get together at the end of the day on a Wednesday because it's hump day or whatever it is. It's every single bit of it. And so when you leave the service, it's not like you stop being an alcoholic. You take that with you. And now you've got a whole lot more to dwell on, and not the compatriots and the compadres that you had, and your shipmates and your fellow, you know, army dudes and all that. You don't have that anymore. You don't have that at all. You've got whoever you went home to, and now you're back in your home state, and you've become that uncle or that veteran. And I chose the Grateful Dead and a bunch of weed, right? But I also chose a lot of alcohol, and that was a bad choice. And so now we need to help these people unravel the bad choices by giving them lots more good choices. I want somebody that's in the military, a veteran that's going to the VA, to admit to their doctor that they drink this amount of alcohol a week and be honest about it. And the doctor say, well, have you tried cannabis? Because here in Missouri, I can write you a prescription for up to 4 ounces a month. And now the VA is going to save money by paying for that 4 ounces, which is like going to be like something like $800, okay, as opposed to the $1,600 in therapy and pills and opioids and all this. And we have to pay that. So I'm trying to save you all money. Let's get weed inside this instead of all these other options. Let's start to take care of these guys. Let's get cannabis drinks inside the VFWs, inside the Eagles lounges, and all these different veterans memorial parks and all this. Let's win this game instead of lose it like we've been, because we can dial in. You think 22 veterans kill themselves a day? That's a false number. I say it's more like 44 or 45 when you include what alcohol does to them, the opioids, the choices that they're making that are killing them. At the end of the day, we're killing veterans by not having this plant legalized. Every single day, we lose more and more. And I'm not going to apologize. I get passionate about it, as I know you do too, Chad. Yeah, but at the end of the day, we've got shipmates out there, and these folks that we fought side by side by, we've got to save them, because I might not have been in the firefight all day long, but Tom or Jane out there in the woods and on that farm that don't want to talk to anybody and needs that weed so that they don't dwell on the shit that we made, that we asked them to do. Like, we owe them a, right? We say they wrote a blank check, right? Don't we say that? Our veterans wrote a blank check for whatever they need, whenever they went and did that. They also wrote a blank check to give their lives, their everything. So at the end of the day, we gotta stop lying to ourselves and saying that we're providing, because we're not. There's nothing but toxins inside the VA, and they're starting to realize it. Introduce psilocybin, introduce THC. Let's save some money, because I know you all are about that, and let's save lives.
100%. You know, and my sister was a unfortunate victim of, you know, opioids from the VA. It took her life. And so, you know, that's one thing, that the reason why I'm on this mission in the first place is just to ensure that shit stops. And I told the VA to fuck off with the pills. Like, you know, when I first got into the system, they wanted to give me muscle relaxers, antidepressants, a whole slew of them. And I told them no. Luckily, at the time, the VA started to kind of back off when it came to cannabis, and I had a medical cannabis card. So they just said, okay, well, just keep using medical cannabis. And that's all I heard from it. They still try every now and then to, you know, get me something, but I just tell them no. You do have the right to tell them no. You know, don't think that, you know, whenever that's to my veterans, you know, to my veterans specifically, you know, you have the right to tell them no to whatever you want. You don't have to take those pills. You don't have to take those opioids. You can tell them no. And if you don't want to take it, don't. If you feel like you have an addictive personality and this isn't going to help, don't do it. Because, yeah, you know, alcohol is terrible. You know, I've dealt with it too. I actually haven't drank in almost a year now. You know, and I'm happy for that. Yeah, I'm glad I haven't drank in over a year. You know, especially when I was in the military. You know, I was stupid. I was a stupid soldier. You know, we were young and dumb. You know, I was 21, and we would do all kinds of dumb shit all the time. And, you know, now as a 37-year-old, I'm like, man, I can't do that anymore. So, you know, it's something I wish that more veterans saw, you know, someone like us, you know, someone like you who's dealt with those issues, but said, you know what, fuck that. You know, I'm going to fix this issue. You know, I'm going to seek help, whatever way I need to do it, whatever way is, you know, fitting for me. And you know what, man, kudos to you for doing that, because, you know, not many veterans are going to do that in the first place. I'm not going to say not strong enough, but there's not that will. There's no one there they don't have their buddies anymore. In the Army, we're battle buddies is what we call each other. You know, I heard you say shipmates, but you know, in the Army, it's battle buddies. You know, you don't have your battles there anymore, you know, to kick you in the ass and be like, ah, let's go, asshole, get up. We need that again. We need that camaraderie, because that's kind of what drives us sometimes, you know, and you don't have to yell at them, but you know, if you got your buddy there, you got your shipmate, whatever, your airman, your wingman, you know, it makes it easier, you know, especially when it comes from another veteran, especially we all know what we all went through. And some of us it's worse than others, but we're not going to judge, you know, like, you know, we get it, you know, like we get it 100%. And, you know, that's one thing that other veterans need to do is start to fight.
Yeah. I don't care what you did when you were in the service, like you're still a hardcore veteran to me. Cause yeah. At the end of the day, some of these cats were just washing dishes. Some of them were flying planes. Some of them were, but at the end of the day, it's like Voltron, bro, one unit. Like, and yeah. No matter how, you know, maybe you did get shot at, or maybe you shot at someone, but at the end of the day, lots of these folks also spent, you know, 6-8 months away from home, or went through some of the most treacherous terrains you've ever seen, or had to learn something that they did not know they were going to learn. Let's admit, the military bait and switches you like crazy when it comes to what you're going to end up doing. Like, so yeah, there's a thing here, because at the end of the day, we're all unloading boxes, you know, and supplies and everything else, right? We're all doing a little bit of the dishes and all that.
Yeah, so, everybody does janitor work.
Yeah, I don't care what a serviceman did. As long as you serve this country, you are a superstar in my world. And I believe that you need to be able to do whatever you want that doesn't harm someone. And I hope that includes yourself, because cannabis is a great way and psilocybin is a great way to direct that path for you as a veteran.
100%. And, you know, I just hope that the VA can, you know, will start implementing something. You know, it's great to hear that they're coming along. I don't know what they're going to do. You know, maybe states like yourself, Missouri, maybe they're going to look at UNM study, you know, with the DOH here, what happens, you know, in Oregon, Washington too, Colorado. I know they have, you know, something coming online as well. Here in New Mexico, I'm working with a group called Soul Trip. And we're trying to get medical cannabis, you know, especially in the next legislative session, because here in New Mexico, every other year we have a 60-day session. And then after that, it's a 30-day session. So next year will be our 60-day session where we have a better chance to get something like this passed. Because in the 30-day session, they're really just working on the budget. Yeah, it's weird. I know. I hate that they do that.
Ask you a question. I want to ask you a question. So at the end of the day, we know that we're years away from it, but not very long. We know that we're going to have sales of psilocybin products. Where do you want those sold, Chad?
Oh man, anywhere. You know, like
They're going to be highly regulated products like cannabis, right? So I think that they're going to try and hand it in some states, at least, unless the federal government comes in. I think that they may try and use the existing ecosystem of the cannabis companies, because if you look at who's investing heavily into psilocybin, it's Big Canna.
Yeah. And you know what? That makes sense. And I was thinking that on the side too. I was like, it would make more sense to for a cannabis retailer to actually dispense it, because they have the most experience out of anybody in any industry on a substance like that, you know? So it only makes sense to just piggyback off that. There's already an existing ecosystem. They just apply for the additional psilocybin license, and way to go. You can do both now. Now, certain most states,
they won't all want to do it. And there also won't be as big of a market for it. Let's admit, not everybody does mushrooms, even though I sure wish they would. Not everybody does, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Not everybody wants to see Jesus, you know, and Muhammad at the same time. But, you know, and Shiva too there, or whoever, you know, everybody's there, you know, whatever. But yeah, you know, like I get it too. You know, if I had that option, that'd be great. You know, it's not like I'm popping the, you know, the chocolate mushroom psilocybin as soon as I leave the store. I want to get home because I know what that shit does. You know, I want to get somewhere comfortable, you know, be around someone who's going to be able to make sure I'm okay. You know, and if it's a micro dose, it won't be that bad. But if you're trying to do a macro dose or something like that, then, you know, of course, you know, you want that watching. Because, you know, I know Colorado, I think they have a system where you can only use it in a doctor environment, et cetera, et cetera. That's kind of.
And they're called, those are facilitator laws. They're asking for licensed facilitators to be able to. And I honestly, when you're talking about medical, okay, because just like cannabis, we're going to start with medical and then we're going to eventually get to recreational. It's going to happen the exact same way. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that you're going to see a lot of that facilitator language, and they're important, brother. And when you're talking about the medical side of things and unraveling PTSD, you don't do that shit with a chocolate bar and Alice in Wonderland. You do that with a facilitator and a hero's dose of mushrooms or ayahuasca or ketamine or whatever it is, that whatever path you're choosing, you do need guidance, because I sure as hell don't know how to unravel what my therapist has done for me over the last 6 months. I couldn't have done that by myself. And like, even the mushrooms themselves, like I feel like I've had success with therapy, but I would have been on better turf. And this is tough for me to say out loud. I would have been in better turf with my mushrooms and done and had more success with them. And I had some success, but much more if I'd had a facilitator involved and had a monthly thing or an every 2 week thing or something where someone was helping me unravel what the therapist was already helping me unravel.
100%. And I agree. You know, we need that, because this isn't like cannabis. You know, they're different things. They still help, you know, a lot. They just help in different ways. And now, you know, with something like psilocybin that unlocks so much, you need help understanding that from someone who has experience or professionalism in that field. And so I agree.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
There's also the part where we want the sophisticated money. We want research. Okay. And the guys putting out a polka dot bar aren't going to go take, you know, $10 million up to a lobbyist or a lobby group or whatever and get shit done, which is what we really need right now. And they won't take that money and put it into research for veterans who are dealing with this particular thing or whatever. So there's a thing where the recreational side, you almost have to allow the medical side to happen for much more reasons than just access. Okay. I want access everywhere. I want it everywhere. But what I want first is the sophisticated money to come in and sort this out for me, because I don't have the research licenses. I'm not a scientist, but I'm a person that wants to know more, and I want clean products that make sense with dosing that matters. And I want to know that the products are what I need up here as well as with my body. So yeah, there's a part where we kind of need those steps of legalization in ways that is tough to talk about as an advocate, right? An activist. Mm-hmm. You want to just go. I want everything at farmers markets today. Well, no, you don't. You don't for a couple reasons. And one is the cats selling the beef at the farmers markets aren't ready for us yet. We got to normalize. We need a spot to smoke there first before we can sell. Okay. We need to let us in first that way. But the other part is, we need the big bread, man. You've got your institutions down there, your educational institutions. They're not doing that for free. That does cost a lot of money. There's organizations behind that who are funding those projects and everything else, because not because they want to make a chocolate bar, but because they want it in an IV bag or in a time release capsule or whatever it is that's going to do what their products are needing to do. And you won't get that with just opening the floodgates from the very first day, because I've done mushrooms recreationally since day one. I have not therapeutically, I believe, done mushrooms 100% correctly yet. And I think that those paths have to still be defined some. And we are, there's lots of anecdotal stuff and everything else, but we need that big sophisticated money to come in and spend at these universities and fund these projects, get this in the hands of all these students who are out there already interested. These kids now, they don't want liquor. They don't want all these things. They want their cannabis. They want their psilocybin. They want their ketamine. These kids are coming in hard in these universities, and they're going to be the ones who are going to be able to take this to the next level. But it's going to unfortunately take money from the big cats to be able to get it done. So we do need steps, and we do need it in the farmers markets at the same time.
No, yeah, you know, and I agree with you on that, because it does happen in steps. And, you know, as you were talking, I was like, yeah, you know, because with the medical side, it allowed them to set up, you know, their medical markets, those businesses get up, get going, get some experience. And then they were able to fight for the recreational side. They had the money. You know, they had the money to do it. They can hire the lobbyists now. Now more entities started getting into the industry from other areas, and they had money. And so, yeah, it kind of piles on. So, you know, you're right in that aspect that, you know, we need, you know, everybody. You know, we have to work with, you know, everybody. And unfortunately, sometimes we have to work with people we really don't want to work with. And to be honest, when I was Army Intel, I learned that a lot, you know, that there was a lot of people, you know, country-wise that I was like, why are we working with these people? But, you know, it's necessary. You know, sometimes it's, you know, it's pertinent to the mission going on, you know, at hand. And there's going to be more good for everybody if you work together versus working against each other. So, yeah, you know, I agree. As much as we talk about the big pharma, the corporations, the MSOs, we need them at the end of the day, because a lot of these guys help the smaller guys fight when it comes to certain laws and stuff like that. Yeah, I know some kind of fight against, you know, whatever it may be. But yeah, at the end of the day, you know, there are some of the only ones that will sue the state if there's like a law that's wrong or being interpreted incorrectly, et cetera, or not being enforced correctly. Sometimes it's only the big companies. So yeah, I get you there. We need them.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? And at the end of the day, prohibition is my biggest enemy. And if prohibition is my biggest enemy, then, you know, when the dust settles, let's fight it out again if you want to. Let's yell at each other about packaging laws and what goes where and access points and all that. But first, let's get the 40,000 people who are in jail out of jail. Let's get the other states that aren't legalized. Let's get the federal government to pass safe banking laws so that minorities can get access to the capital needed to be able to get into these businesses. Let's unravel the false legalization that has happened in several states. And I hate to say it, even mine has issues. And I love this state, and I love the progress that we've had. But there's not been a single state that is legalized properly yet. And I say that to this day, nobody's done it correctly to be able to maintain a market while at the same time maintaining people's rights. And like until we get the social equity thing right, which we haven't yet, not one single state has gotten social equity play right, until we start taking care of the people who took the arrows in the back for everybody, we really have not, it's all a big false legalization in my eyes. We still have so much more work to do. And it's, I don't think it's going to stop in our lifetime, Chad. I just don't.
Yeah. And you know, I say it all the time. No one has done this correctly. Even New Mexico, we're on the right track, but you know, no one's done it correctly yet. And I can't agree with you more or less. I was like, God, it's like, you just took the words right out of my mouth, brother. Yeah. You know, and even some, you added some more to it too, which I love and everything. So yeah, thank you so much for that, because you know, we need to understand that, you know, we have to not stop, you know, because we're on a freaking good track right now. You know, hopefully this year we'll see something happen on the federal side. Like you said, we're days away from finding that out, 10 days away, you know, at the time of recording from that. So, you know, we'll see what happens, and, you know, we'll see what happens with the psilocybin thing too, and all that. So, but anyway, man, that's really all I had for, you know, that conversation. I really wanted to get onto the last thing and then we'll get out of here. I just wanted to update everybody on the Border Patrol issue. And I'm sure you're kind of curious what's going on, because you guys don't have, you know, the Border Patrol issue and all that, but you know, certain states do, but some don't. And, you know, it'd be great to hear a perspective from someone that doesn't live here too, you know, and, you know, like that's crazy or whatever. But I guess I'll update everybody on that real fast. You know, no incidents were reported, you know, this past week. You know, I know the week before I told you guys that one happened, I think that morning. For those who don't know, and for Dan and for yourself too, inland border checks are within 100 miles of, you know, New Mexico and in any border really, essentially. And here in New Mexico, you know, they're in Las Cruces specifically, I can't go any direction without hitting one. Right now, the Border Patrol is seizing any cannabis that they run into or find. And so at first they were just hands off. If you had your manifest, you had all the information. I think a couple of people even told me that, you know, they had them send what vehicles were going through. So they had it as a registration, and they were cool with it, whatever, just letting it through, you know, it's legal. And then out of nowhere, starting in February, they just started cracking down. I think it was on Valentine's Day. And then last month alone, there were 7 incidences of them seizing cannabis. And I think there's about over $300,000 to about $500,000 of, you know, cannabis that's been confiscated so far in value by the Border Patrol. So this is something that's really alarming, because where we're at in New Mexico, especially where I am, we have Sunland Park, Las Cruces, and Sunland Park is steady number 5 in sales in the whole state. And they only have 17,000 people. You know, they're the closest to Texas. And so majority of those sales come from Texas. And if they can't, for the growers there, if they can't send their product up north to make even more sales, they might, you know, go out of business. And this is really terrible for our industry. So I just wanted to update everybody what's going on. It looks like the medias are starting to pick up on it. High Times just put out an article today at the time of recording. Marijuana Moment, they actually did an article as well. I spoke with Associated Press, I think last week or the week before. So hopefully we see something like that on the national level. And we're reaching out to more. The only weird thing about this isn't happening in California or Arizona. So that's one thing that's kind of raising our flags. Like, well, why just us and not these other states? California has a bigger market, a bigger population, and more money than us. So why just target a poor state? So that's one thing that's kind of confused us a little bit. I know coming from another state, you're like, why the fuck is this happening at all? You know, like, this sounds dumb, you know?
So my question is, are they're popping commercial cannabis, or they're popping patients?
They're popping everybody. If they find it, they're taking it. But you know, they're really going after the industry. You know, if like they see like a certain vehicle and they know it probably has cannabis, they'll bring the dog out, or they'll just have the dog at certain times.
That's what I saw, is they hit one of your guys' trucks for and got them for cash and cannabis.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing I've been asking people. And I think that was, you know, one of them recently, is I was asking if they took the cash. Cause you know, that's one thing that they love taking. Federal government loves taking cash, you know, on top of property. And that's one thing that's been threatened too, is a couple of personal vehicles have been threatened to be taken as evidence, you know, because they had all this cannabis in it too. And, you know, they told us that they've been directed to do this. So it's coming from somewhere. I don't know if it's from the federal government or someone from the state bitched. I don't know.
It smells like just one, like, I'll be honest, if it's regional like that, it could just, I don't know the situation like that, but it could just be one Border Patrol entity, like one of their platoons or whatever they call them. But at the end of the day, that's exactly why you need federal legalization. Every one of those trucks need a federal license as well, so that they can move about the building. Because that's the problem, right? Is like, anytime you cross anything that's federally, in anything, or even state to state, you can't cross those borders legally. So it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's also constitutionally illegal to have something that's perfectly legal, a commodity that we sell. It's illegal to not have interstate commerce. Like it's in our Constitution that states should be able to sell to other states. And whether that's auto parts or bits from a computer or however that shit works, it's just, that's the way our economy is supposed to roll. And cannabis seems to think that it gets to be unique like that. And that uniqueness is what's causing these kind of conversations where now people's livelihoods are threatened. Now they've already, I guarantee you, they've already hired hundreds of thousands of dollars in attorneys, and somebody's going to lose a mortgage over it because the federal government's screwing around. We had the Cole Memorandum, which was in place. The Cole Memorandum was the protection that the cannabis industry had. Trump did away with the Cole Memorandum. That left a wide open ability for this exact same thing to happen. The federal government is perfectly legally allowed at this point to interfere with our state programs. And that's why we've got to get this under wraps now, because just right there, I don't care. Big Canada might have lost some stuff, and you know, somebody that's, you know, these millionaires might have, but also somebody small probably got hit and lost their livelihood over that bullshit. So
yeah. Yeah, and that's the sad part. And we're trying to do everything we can here to try to figure this out. You know, a bunch of the businesses are working together. We're working with the, you know, the state government. We're in, you know, in contact with our, you know, our federal representatives. And you know this, and I know this. Please, guys, you know, New Mexico or not, contact your federal representatives and your state representatives on this matter, because, you know, this could affect, you know, a lot of other states. Because I read another article. Well, I didn't get to read the whole thing because, you know, the freaking paywall. But it looks like, you know, Michigan is actually worried about this exact issue, which is surprising to me, because Michigan, I've never really heard, would have such issues like we do with this, because they're next to the Canadian border. And as some of you know, some of you may not know, we actually don't really have a barrier like we do between us and Mexico, or, you know, as strict of a barrier, I would say. There's literally nothing there. It's like just mowed out area, and there's no fence. No one's really there. It's pretty open, and you can kind of just cross through as much as you just freely if you want. You know, if you get caught, okay. But, you know, it's not hard is what I'm trying to say. And that's like a 4,000 mile border versus like our 18 or 1500, you know, 1,000 mile or 1500 mile, you know, one with Mexico. So it's a bigger border. You know, there's many more states that border that one. And that's one thing that I was kind of worried about. I was like, is anybody else in the north going through this? They're like, no, but, you know, illegals and drugs do come from Canada. You know, it's not like, you know, it's perfect. We've all seen Kid Cannabis before. You know, we've seen the money and how easy it was for him to move all that product. You know, if it wasn't as hard as it is for the Mexican side. You know, he still had some preparations he had to do, but it was nothing near like what it is. And so now Michigan throwing up their, you know, alert flags, that tells me that now we're making waves, and now we're alerting more people. Because if Michigan, who's, you know, a bigger state, ever, you know, they've had a legal market for, you know, quite some time now. They've had a medical market for many years before that. If they're worried about this now, that's good. That's saying something. So hopefully something happens, you know, because I'm not too sure what the situation is with the Border Patrol in Michigan, how involved they are, where they are, you know, if they're on the water, which I assume they were, because, you know, it borders Canada and stuff like that, you know, where they really have to deal with this issue and where the border checks are, if there's big cities kind of like, you know, Sunland Park to Albuquerque that's in the way. But they actually probably go through something similar that we do with the border checks, but it doesn't seem that they're being bothered either. And this is something that I said before. It's a well-known fact that here in the area that a lot of Border Patrol agents, I want to say a lot, that a few, and it could be a very small minority, some are paid off by the cartel to allow certain vehicles through. And some are also paid off by the cannabis industry. Now, my thing is maybe a couple of agents or a few agents were just trying to get more money from the industry as well, too, because they figured out that some companies are already paying some of their friends off. They want that triple dip. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's also the thing where this is why if I listen, I'm not investigating it and I'm not inspector detector down there in New Mexico. But I think that at the end of the day, you probably have some asshole in charge down there of one particular group of Border Patrol who decided to say, you know what, the state needs to learn that the federal government's in charge. And it wouldn't be the first time that that's happened where they buck each other and we're the ones that suffer for it. So
yeah.
I think that you probably could have a situation down there where you've got a little bit of that federal versus state government Hatfield and McCoy kind of thing going on, because y'all are wild down there anyway, your government. I'm just gonna be honest, like some of the policies in New Mexico, the catch and release stuff, like it's wild down there compared to like a lot of this, like we're a very red state, you know, and it's just a totally different ball game down there. So like I could see where those two entities might clash a little bit. There might have been shit. There could have been a conversation between a state person and a federal person. And the federal guy went home and had his alcohol and yelled at his wife and said, "You know what? Fuck it. Tuesday, I'm busting somebody."
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, now everybody's got permission to bust everybody in the area and got an issue.
Yeah, and that's a great theory, and I love it because, you know, I tell people, you know, one thing I learned in the intel is you have to think outside of the box and think of every theory that you can think of because it could be one of those. And, you know, and that's a good point. And, you know, I was also thinking of some other theories too, that could be just some new guy who's coming in trying to impress his uppers, you know, or somebody trying to make a promotion, or, you know, just a hard ass that became in charge. And now he just decided to crack down. But whatever the case, you know, we suffer and while they play their games, and that's bullshit and it shouldn't be the case, you know, and that's what sucks about this.
We suffer. And I'll guarantee you, whoever's making those decisions suffers from endocannabinoid deficiency syndrome. Needs to smoke some weed, for real.
Maybe a couple of microdoses of mushroom psilocybin there, you know?
Load them up.
Yeah. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for joining me today, man. You know, that's all I have for, you know, for the Border Patrol update. It's been great. You know, it's been great conversations, man. I appreciate it so much. You know, as I say, you know, I love it when someone can come on and, you know, bring me other perspectives and stuff like that. And just add more to this. And you know what? Keep killing it out there, brother. You know, you're doing the Lord's work out there with you for the plant, for, you know, for psilocybin, for all of us, you know, especially the veterans, bro. You know, I hold you near and dear to my heart when it comes to the veteran stuff, because I know you care too. So, you know, I thank you so much, man. And I can't wait to have you on the show again. And it's been a long time coming, getting you on the show. But, you know, you stay busy too, just like myself. So, you know, the time was right. And we finally got you on. So, man, thank you again, man. Well, I can't thank you enough.
Thanks for having me on. And again, thank you for your service. And thank you all you New Mexican veteran, New Mexico veterans out there that are listening to the program. And also congratulations on your award, brother. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. You know, and again, thank you all again for who voted, who reached out and congratulated me. You know, it's been great. And, you know, I'll hold on to that title for I guess a whole year. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, maybe we'll get more in the future. So I appreciate it, brother. And can't wait to see you with your achievements. And make sure that all of you like, follow, subscribe, whatever you got to do to make sure you stay in the know. All right. I'll see you guys next week. We'll talk about this on the show, you know, later on the show. Hash holes. I don't know if you guys have those over there. You know, you call them something different. Yeah, yeah.
Here, sure.
Crazy everywhere. You know, the hash rosins, you know, going wild over here, the hash holes. So, yeah, that's our thing down here. You know, I haven't seen those here yet, though.
It makes you wonder what's next every time we elevate. Like, we elevated to rosin, right? From live resin, from diamonds to all, you know, remember when we were all about diamonds 2 years ago, you know? Now, now guys, like, we're hitting rosin all day long. Now they got hash holes. It's like, what's next, dude? Like, a magical fucking suppository that just does everything? Like, I don't know. Like,
right, a unicorn joint I stuck to my forehead and it smokes itself somehow? That. Like, yeah.
Ear thing? I don't know. What's next, you know, about it? Innovation, dude.
Right, 100% innovation. Yeah, dude. Yeah, anyway, we'll get back to it, I guess.
Okay. Chad, give me the clap because the mic's right there on you.
Okay. I'll give him the clap. And wait, what were we talking about?
Hash holes.
Oh, yeah. We were just talking about hash holes right now. I guess we'll just jump and talk about the Missouri market. You're going to have a fun time editing this one, Gina.